I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I, too, was on the phone throughout much of the debate with Obama world people, with Democrats, with people who are political operatives, with campaign operatives. My phone really never stopped buzzing throughout. And the universal reaction was somewhere approaching panic. The people who were texting with me were very concerned about President Biden seeming extremely feeble, seeming extremely weak. And, you know, I'll just reiterate what I said earlier. President Biden had one job tonight, and it was one primary job. And, yes, it was to litigate Donald Trump's, you know, criminality and all of those things. But he had to settle his own party.
Mm-hmm.
He needed to settle Democrats. Democrats, you know, they always talk about Democrats are bedwetters and Democrats are always panicking. Yes, Democrats are always panicking. They're always scared, right? They're always thinking they're going to lose. Like, Democrats are very pessimistic. This is just
neurotic.
Who they are. They're neurotic.
Yeah, they are neurotic, and they're going to be more so now. Thanks for joining us. We're going to break it down for you, last night's debate. I got to tell you right now, and I want to remind you, I don't want sheep following this program. I want you to be critical thinkers and checking out facts and sources I put in front of you. I never try to hide where I get my information. And you're always welcome to check and double check me. I do the same for myself. You were listening then to Joy Reid as she was appearing on a panel on CNN, flat out admitting there's panic inside the Democrat Party. Neurotic as they might be, they also are realistic to realize that might actually be a train coming at us. We should probably get off the track, but we can't get the guy that we want off the track, off the track. What do we do next? Joy Reid, in talking about, I was on the phone all night, she mentioned Obama's name. It's almost like it's a slip or not. I'm not sure. She didn't mention any other names, but she said various insiders and people, Obama specifically. So I want to know if she really was talking to Obama last night. That would tell us even more what we suspect anyway about what Obama's trying to do behind the scenes to shore up Joe Biden. Now, again, I don't want sheep following us, but I'm going to do something in the next few moments. I'm going to tell you who you must vote for, who you must vote for. And also later in this hour, anti-Trumper John Lebouthière will offer his analysis on the debate. John is a never-Trumper, a Reaganite. A lot of you hate to hear him, but I'm going to have him on the air, and we're going to get his opinion about last night's debate. Glad to have you with us. This is the first of 2 hours of Larry Connors USA, back-to-back. We're here every Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. And when we're on the air, we're streaming video for you. Easy to watch. You go to News Talk STL Rumble, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Larry Connors USA, Rumble, or Facebook, or Twitter. And you'll be able to watch the program while we're on the air. If not, you can go back and pull up the video and watch it later. I know many of you do. Many of you wait till over the weekend to catch up on them. I see it because the numbers pop. Or, of course, you can listen at that same time over the weekend when you have more time. However you choose to do it, we appreciate you doing it. Would you do a couple things for me? Push the like button, because that really screws with the algorithm of the big tech companies that try to destroy us. And two, push forward. Send it on to some others. Share. Push that share button. We get more word out, because this is obviously going to be the most critical election. I know I said the same thing, reference Trump and Hillary, and that was critical at that time. And then Trump against Biden. Again, it was critical the first time. And it is even more so this time. I'm not crying wolf. I'm telling you the fact. Now, my mandate for you to tell you how to vote, This is my message. This is my mandate. How you should vote. You should vote for you. Vote for you and your family. Which of those candidates last night that you saw or that you've been listening to all these months and going forward, which one is going to deliver for you and your family? That should be your priority. You vote for you and your family. I think I know where many of you will fall, but keep that at the center of your mind. I'm voting for me and my family and this nation. That's my mandate. Vote for you, your family, our nation. And I was watching the debate last night out at Johnny's Hideout. Great debate watch party. Thank you for all of you who came out, had a chance to visit, meet with you, talk to you. And I was watching the debate, and of course, they were having teletype interpretations of what each candidate was saying. I assume they're using a new AI to do that, but I know how they can keep up with some of it, be as accurate as it appeared. But I can also think AI must have had a hell of a hard time trying to interpret and understand Joe Biden a couple times. I'll give you some examples in a moment. But the other thing that came to me suddenly last night, the Democrats won the coin flip when they set the debate. They called tails. Who calls tails on a coin flip? But they did. And they had the choice. You can either decide which side of the stage you want to be on, or do you get the last word in before the debate ends? They each had closing statements, but actual last closing statement. The Biden team chose position on stage. And I was completely flustered by it. Why would you do that? And then watching last night, I forgot how many times I saw Biden reach up to his right ear and kind of touch it. I'm not saying he had anything in his ear. I'm just saying I saw him do that several times. You did too. Being on stage right, as you looked at the screen, he came in from your right. He walked to the center of the stage. He did face the camera directly, but you never saw the right side of his ear, the right ear. Do you see where I'm going with this? They can be minuscule ear aids put in, and if they're deep inside the ear, but they might still be detectable. There were no other photographers in there. No press gaggle of any type. Just CNN, and I assume a White House photographer, because that's normal. But what you saw, Joe Biden come out from the right, walk to the center of the stage, face you directly, and turn to Trump occasionally. And again, you were only being exposed to his left side. And then when Dr. Jill went to help lead him off the stage, two steps, very delicate balancing act, another guy came by to make sure that they were going to be okay. Again, you never saw his right ear. I'm just asking. But again, back to how he spoke and how he didn't and what kind of sense he made or not, here's another perfect example.
What's happened? I've changed it in a way that now you're in a situation where there are 40% fewer people coming across the border illegally. It's better than when he left office. And I'm going to continue to move until we get the total ban on the total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
President Trump?
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either. Look.
They were quick to give him a bailout. Mr. Trump, thank you, Joe. Don't say anything else. I don't know if he's out of time. Many times he did not fulfill his time obligation or time allotted to him. Several times. Which means he was only primed a certain point and couldn't go beyond that. One time, if I recall, Trump got called that you still got time, and he certainly took advantage of it. But it was almost like, oh, Biden, you're forced to be back in there again? I thought I said everything. Well, you still left 80 seconds or more. But Trump saying, I don't even know what he's talking about. Let me give you another example of Biden being absolutely incoherent.
Making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with the dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if We finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden. President Trump?
Well, he's right. He did beat Medicare. He beat it to death, and he's destroying Medicare.
Biden was obviously struggling. When he first came out, I'll be honest with you, when Biden first came out, and then he started speaking the first time, I thought, he's not going to make 90 minutes. I mean, he was completely befuddled from the beginning. I mean, that's when you, when the horse comes out of the gate, that's when you jump to a lead if you can. He was still in the gate, it's open, and he's not moving. And when he did, it's stumbling out. I mean, I thought that was one of the worst starts for a presidential candidate in a presidential debate I have ever seen, ever, ever. And I've got a little experience to that extent. But I want you to listen to some of the Democrats, how they have been freaking out. The Democrats.
What are officials who hold office in the Democratic Party saying tonight about President Biden's performance?
There are at least some House Democrats who were gathered tonight watching this together talking to the White House about having him step down. That's how bad it was in their view.
Anderson, this was a game-changing debate in the sense that right now as we speak, there is a deep, a wide, and a very aggressive panic. It involves party strategists. It involves elected officials. It involves fundraisers. And they're having conversations about the president's performance, which they think was dismal, which they think will hurt other people down the party in the ticket. And they're having conversations about what they should do about it. Some of those conversations include, should we go to the White House and ask the president to step aside? Other of the conversations are about, should prominent Democrats go public with that call? Because they feel this debate was so terrible.
It was a really disappointing debate performance from Joe Biden. I don't think there's any way, any other way to slice it. His biggest issue that he had to prove to the American people was that he had the energy, had the stamina, and he didn't do that. And so I think that is of concern. And I think for a lot of Democrats, that's very disappointing.
But our guy can't hit on the issues. He has one significant problem, his age, and tonight made it worse.
And who said that?
This was a senior Midwestern Democrat watching this tonight, like many Democrats, freaked out by the first 7 minutes.
What's you mean a senior like in age or someone who's an elected official?
Someone who works with elected officials and has worked on several Democratic campaigns. And this is widespread. Talking to Democrats tonight, they believe the first 7 minutes, probably the worst 7 minutes of the Biden presidency. But
well, just like I was saying, you stumble out of the gate. Your first 7 minutes, and already the folks are thinking, oh my God, this is going to be more than a dumpster fire. This is an entire total hot mess. Now, how do we make it better? And that began with a report from Ed O'Keefe, a former White House aide, saying, we got House Democrat members already talking, House and GOP, and I should say House Democrat and Senate members already talking about, how do we go to the White House, tell Biden, you need to get out of the way? But here comes Kamala to the rescue.
Listen, first of all, what we saw tonight is the president making a very clear contrast with Donald Trump on all of the issues that matter to the American people. Yes, there was a slow start, but it was a strong finish. And what became very clear through the course of the night is that Joe Biden is fighting on behalf of the American. So I'm not going to spend all night with you talking about the last 90 minutes when I've been watching the last 3.5 years of performance.
But this was a debate that your campaign wanted. You pushed for this debate at this moment. You can't honestly say, I mean, can you say that you are not concerned at all having watched the president's performance tonight?
It was a slow start. That's obvious to everyone. I'm not going to debate that point. I'm talking about the choice in November. I'm talking about one of the most important elections in our collective lifetime. And do we want to look at what November will bring and go on a course for America that is about a destruction of democracy, electing a man who has said he'll be a dictator on day one? Or do we want to continue on a course that's about strengthening America's economy?
They repeat the same old lie. Trump said he's going to be a dictator. He said, I'm going to be a dictator on day one. I'm going to do exactly what Biden did with the executive order. I'm going to reinstall the border, and I'm going to restart Keystone Pipeline. After that, I'm done. We'll get back to regular business. Yes, Biden had a weak start. My view again, when he came out, his voice struggling, straining, but the spin machine started up immediately. How do we explain how he spoke, why he coughed, why his voice often broke? Well, here is the fabricated response as reported by CBS.
Nancy, I think the first thing that many people witnessed in watching this debate was President Biden's shaky, hoarse voice. What's wrong with him?
Well, Nora, we only found out what's wrong with him about halfway through the debate. We started asking right away. As soon as he took the stage, as soon as he opened his mouth and started speaking, he obviously sounded raspy. And so I started firing off texts to various Biden campaign officials, what's wrong with him, and got radio silence. One person said, well, maybe he just needs to warm up. And then about 45 minutes in, a slew of responses from White House and Biden campaign officials saying, yes, he has had a cold for the past few days. He was examined by his personal doctor, Kevin O'Connor, at Camp David. He tested negative for COVID, but he does have a cold, and that's why he is raspy. But that really begs the question, Nora, why they didn't let people know beforehand to sort of set expectations among the audience so people weren't taken by surprise, particularly when so many voters already have concerns about his age, about his stamina. I asked all those White House officials after they confirmed that he was sick, why they hadn't said anything in advance. Nobody answered.
Nobody answered. I love her statement when I was first asking, what's going on? What's going on? Radio silence. We don't give an answer until we huddle and come up with our answer and then spin it and spin it, put in the echo chamber. Again, Joy Reid, CNN, and not a Trump supporter, a Biden supporter. Panic!
His job was to calm his party, to make them feel that, yes, I can do this. I have four more years in me. I have the ability and the stamina and the strength to do four more years. He did not do that. He did the opposite of that. He made them more panicked. Mm-hmm. The people who were texting me were even more panicked. They actually expected it to be better than it was, and now they're in a, I won't say a full-fledged panic, but it's getting there.
And are people that you're talking to are expressing these concerns, are these people who are involved in Democratic politics, or
yes,
are these liberals watching TV?
This is not liberals watching TV. These are campaign people. Mm-hmm. These are people who are either Democratic operatives. These are people who are former, you know, sort of Obama World Administration people. These are people who are in the business.
Okay.
So the civilians are also panicking. They're also texting me, but I was trying to kind of ignore the civilians and really talk to the campaign folks.
Yeah, and the civilians, by the way, are the ones who vote. Wait till you hear what CNN and the New York Times had to say about it. I'm going to give you that a little bit later. But still to come in this edition of Larry Connors USA, Supreme Court rulings affecting January 6th and maybe Trump, and government overreach, Supreme Court ruling on that one as well. You know that based upon what we saw happen last night and what we've seen by weaponization of this government, if the Supreme Court has said, you guys are continually overreach, you cannot control and regulate, take control of small businesses as you've been doing, that's a great sign from America right there. We'll get into it in more detail. But up next, the man many of you love to hate, a never-Trumper, John LeBoutier. This is going to set Speaker Tim Jones over the edge. Who do you think he thinks won the debate? Lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
My sponsor, Wellington Environmental, has helped thousands deal with hazardous materials. Hospitals, offices, schools, even homes. Here's something new. Wellington now offers dustless blasting. This is just like sandblasting, but without all the dust and emissions. Wellington uses everything from ground glass, walnuts, corn, even dry ice pellets. One university had Wellington remove their parking lot striping because dustless blasting is fast and it does not damage the concrete. So as a business or homeowner, I'm sure you could use this process. Industrial tanks, swimming pools, graffiti on buildings. And in fact, Wellington is blasting a Texaco station that will be revised as an historic building. Check the website for details and photos. WellingtonSTL.com. WellingtonSTL.com.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps in the afternoon.
Horace, Americans individually have lost over $4,000 in income and over $7,000 where you have a household with both parents working.
It shouldn't be, it's the economy, stupid. We should just say, stupid! It's the economy. Unbelievable the devastation that Americans are feeling.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps, weekdays at 3:30 on News Talk STL.
If you haven't been to Lit Cigar Lounge in the District at Chesterfield, you're missing a great experience. Premium cigars, drinks, spacious seating, TVs in every direction. This and more explain why Lit was voted Best Cigar Lounge 2 years in a row. Now you can be at Lit and order Napoli Brothers pizza and pasta delivered to you. In fact, Napoli's just a few doors down, a coal-fired oven giving a unique taste. Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta, now open in the Chesterfield District.
Are you thinking about buying medicine online? A search for online pharmacies yields more than 20 million results. But which ones can you trust? Medicines bought from unlicensed online pharmacies can be dangerous. You may get a fake drug, your condition may get worse, or you may experience a bad reaction. Don't put your health at risk. To learn how to find an online pharmacy that's safe and legal, visit fda.gov/besaferx. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
Great news for my sponsor, Napoli C. And it's no surprise to me, nor hundreds who have dined there. The first time I entered, it was clear Napoli C is unique. The decor, the fish, imaginative cocktails. And, of course, Napoli C is right next door to Napoli 3 in St. Charles. Napoli 2 is in Town and Country. The original Cafe Napoli is in Clayton. And I'm honored to endorse each of them. Visit any of the Cafe Napolis.
This is News Talk STL.
Heat Bat Production. He got Walrus Gumbel. He got no sideboard. He want Spinal Cracker. He got feet down below his knee. Hold you in his arm, Jay. You can feel his disease. Come together.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Well, my next guest changed his schedule. They had an event planned, pushed it back just so he could be with us, and I thank him for that. John Labutier, former New York congressman, a Reaganite, went in under the Reagan years, also author of the book Harvard Hates America, and that's been on full display. He wrote the book 45 years ago. He is a never-Trumper. But, John, again, I want to thank you and let the audience know that you pushed another event aside so you could spend some time with them.
Happy to do it, Larry, especially because you asked me before the debate that we would talk about the debate, and that's what we're going to talk about. And before you ask me anything about it, I'm going to tell you within 5 minutes of that debate beginning what I said to the two people I was watching it with last night. I said, Biden is too old. He's got to go. They got to get a new candidate. And then for the next hour and a half, that just reinforced my sentiment that that's the end of Joe Biden as a viable political candidate.
Wow. That's pretty damning for that. So does that mean, you will put your vote in for the Trump column?
Oh, no, no.
No! Who are you going to vote for then?
Trump.
Who are you going to vote for?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. We don't know yet what the race is going to be.
So you're going to take anyone other than Trump just because?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. We'll break that down in a moment. But first of all, one of the comments I had airing before you joined us, they pointed out that I think as a Democrat operative, he stumbled in the first 7 minutes and as you said, the first 5 minutes. I saw the same thing when he came out. I thought, I doubted even he was going to be able to last 90 minutes.
Well, I mean, that's a fair thing. A week ago, when he was leaving Delaware to get on the airplane to fly to Camp David, the press asked him out on the tarmac of some Delaware airport, how's the debate prep going? I don't know if you saw this clip that day. And he was shuffling even worse over to the airplane staircase, and he put his right hand up with a thumbs up, didn't turn. It looked so stiff and, you know, not well. And then he got on the plane, and we know that we didn't see him for a week. He was at Camp David. I'd like to know, what did they do at Camp David for a week to bring back from there this poor creature last night who couldn't make a coherent sentence?
Well, the spin machine started up. A CBS reporter was talking about, you know, I saw that. I started reaching out my contact. What's going on? What's going on? And radio silence. Didn't get anything. And then suddenly a flood. Oh, well, he had a cold. In other words, by then they got their messages together. He had a cold. He's still recovering from it. Now, you and I both had colds that affect our voice and our overall demeanor and everything, but if they were treating him even with vitamin B to pump him up a little bit, you think that would have helped. But what's your evaluation of what the issue was?
He's old.
Ah, simple as that.
And, you know, not everybody who's 81 is the same as everybody else.
They're, you're right.
Everybody's different. I know people who are 60 who look are out of shape and old. I mean, but in this case, poor Joe Biden has grown old right in front of our eyes. And that's it. We saw it. It's not going to get better. He maybe has better days and worse days. I don't know. But this is the biggest day of the political year, a day he asked for. He got all the requirements he asked for, studio, no studio audience, all that stuff. And he was just terrible. He was just beyond terrible. The cold thing, I don't know, but his voice was weak and his look was bad. His mouth was hanging open. It just, I don't think we can recover from that and beat Trump.
Not good optics.
Not good optics, but it's more than optics. It's, this is a guy who's got a record for 4 years and he couldn't sell it last night.
I'm looking at a piece on, Axios saying they talked to a person in Biden's orbit, and their statement is that, well, first of all, there's already finger pointing among the White House officials who's to blame in his inner circle for how the debate prep was done. And this one source said he was overprepared, relying on minutia when all that mattered was vigor and energy. They prepared him for the wrong debate. He was overprepared when what he needed was rest. He took a week, and then adds, it's confounding. Does that make any sense to you?
No, and I wondered what was going on there for a week. If he was preparing and doing a few dress rehearsals and then hanging out to relax a little bit, which is smart, the way a fighter goes away to train for a fight.
Yeah.
They work and rest and get themselves tuned up. That's what you do. I thought that's what this was.
That's what we thought. Former Obama advisor told Axios, DEFCON 1.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in around 1968-ish, I was 15, and my brother took me to the lightweight championship fight at Shea Stadium. 50,000 people. The champ was Carlos Ortiz. And around the seventh or eighth round, he was getting on in his career. He was the champ, though, and he was getting the hell beat out of him. And after the, say, seventh round, he sat down, as they do, on their stool in their corner, and I looked at him. And when the eighth round was going to begin, he never got up. He stayed on the stool. They obviously ended the fight. And right. I said to my brother, that guy grew old in the fight.
Yeah.
And that was the end of him.
That's a great
analogy.
And
that's what happened. Yeah. And that's what happened last night. No animosity towards Joe Biden. I like Joe Biden as a human being, but he's too old to be president again. And they need to move on. And they need to get a new candidate.
I want to go down that road with you, but I agree with you. And I was on a previous show on the station earlier today, and I was saying I feel sorry for him. And the other hosts say, we don't feel sorry for him. And I'm not knocking them for that. It's just I said, but you have grace. I mean, you look at the man and his age. I feel sorry, but he shouldn't be serving as vice president. I mean, president. I don't want to see anyone reach that point in their life. I mean, it's a terrible thing to watch. Two things I want to put in front of you. They win the coin toss and they get an opportunity to decide, do we want to use our choice since we won the coin toss where we are on the stage, or do we get last word? You would always want last word, but they chose stage presence. And I'm raising this question for you. He comes in, he wants stage right, he comes in from the right screen. You only see his left ear. Then when he's talking, you only see straight on. You never see the right ear. I don't know how many times he reached up and touched his right ear and around that area. And not trying to start a conspiracy theory, but why would you take stage position unless you're trying to hide something that's going to be in his right ear? Your thought.
Well, I hadn't heard that. I rule nothing out.
Well, I'm just bringing it up. I'm not saying it's out there.
But if he had an earpiece and people were telling him stuff through the earpiece, it didn't help him. None of it worked.
All right, back to your other issue. Yeah. If we're not going to have him on the ticket, how are you going to take Kamala in? How are you going to do this? Is it going to happen at the convention? What do you see the next steps?
Okay, well, at least two steps. First step, how do you get Biden to agree not to run and withdraw from the race? Because he is the nominee. The delegates are pledged to him. They like him. And that most of them, by law, on the first ballot, have to vote for him. So if he wants to keep running, he's the nominee, whether anybody else likes it or not. So how to get him to back out? It seems to me the key players are his wife and his sister, Valerie, who's been his number one political advisor for 50-plus years. They have to be convinced that Joey isn't going to help himself by running. And that probably means we wait a week, we get new polling on the state of the race, and Trump has moved even farther ahead, and it's all bad. And the Democrats are pounding on them. We've got to get Biden to not run again. He can stay as president to the end of his term, but no longer run. Back out of the race, open it up, have an open convention. And then that's stage two. There are no more primaries this year, so how do they do it? Well, all the candidates who want to run, Kamala, Newsom, Shapiro, Whitmer, whoever, they're going to have to start wooing the 3,900 delegates to get them to vote for them when the convention begins in late August.
So let me get a couple things clear in wrapping up here. A couple things. One, do you think Jill and Valerie really care about him and his health, or they're just all about holding on to the power as long as they can? I mean, if you cared about him, would you want your father out there doing that?
It's not a father. It's a
Well, I'm talking about life. Husband, father, whatever relative.
Right. Well, obviously they care and love Joe Biden.
All right, I'll grant that.
They love him. But hey, I give you this. You love the helicopters, the Air Force One, all the glitz and the power. Yeah, you dig that too. And so that means they're going to all have to say, we're giving this thing up.
All right.
And look at the history of the United States. How many presidents have given it up? Not many.
John LeBoutier, last question in about the 30 seconds for you to do it. So you, regardless of who they come up with on the left, you are going to vote for them as opposed to a vote for Trump based upon his record of what he did for the nation.
Precisely because of what he did to this country, I don't want another Trump.
Are you better off now than you were when Trump was in office?
Well, Trump's a disaster. But
well, I'm sorry. Were you off? Are you better off?
I'm much better off today than when Trump was president.
Okay. All right, John LeBoutier, thank you for your time, and enjoy your event.
Okay, Larry.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Thanks.
Yep.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
John Beale knows that right after a hailstorm, new roofing companies start popping up everywhere. But the Small Business Administration reports 96% of them go out of business within the first 5 years. So how good is that warranty? John Beale started in the roofing business, helping his granddad and his dad. Always offering the best roof, best price, best guarantee. John Beale Roofing, not some fly-by-the-night operation. Call my friend John. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
Hey, this is a great time to get fantastic deals at Ackerman Toyota, number one volume dealer in the area. Why? Very simple. They want to make you happy. They'll come up with a deal that puts you in the driver's seat. You'll be smiling as you drive off the lot. You got a trade-in? You're going to get top dollar from Ackerman. Looking for a premium used car truck? Ackerman is the answer. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota for life.
News, analysis, opinion.
USA, USA. That's a big game, man.
She's really losing control.
People in China didn't ask me about people mowing each other down in a mall.
This is News Talk STL.
It is their responsibility.
He is a metastasizing agent.
We're all keeping a close eye on this.
Illegal immigration is crazy right now.
This United States is not being overrun.
News Talk STL.
It is a crisis at the border without question.
At NewsTalkSTL.com.
My sponsor, McGuire Moving, has job openings for drivers and movers offering competitive pay. You can be off every night if you want or on the road. You're off every other weekend. Full benefits, insurance, paid vacations. But McGuire is a very good company. So here's a very important requirement. You must excel in making customers happy. Full or part-time job? More information, go to McGuireMoving.com. Apply online at McGuireMoving.com/careers.
This is News Talk STL.
I guess I grew up on an older road. A pedal to the metal, always did what I told. Until I found out that my brand new clothes came secondhand from the rich kids next door. And I grew up fast, I guess I grew up mean. There's a thousand things inside my head I wish I ain't seen. And now I just wander through a real bad dream. Or feeling like I'm coming apart at the seams. But thank you, Jack Daniels. Oh, number seven, Tennessee.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
More breaking news, this time about the January 6th rioters. The Supreme Court has just ruled. Let's get to Shannon Bream. What did they say?
So what they have said is that one of the statutes the Justice Department used to charge hundreds of different January 6th defendants is no good. And that includes President Donald Trump, because he has actually had two of these counts against him in the Jack Smith D.C. case against him, that federal criminal case that has been on hold here. So what essentially they say is this statute, which was passed in the wake of Enron, they say it doesn't fit here. He says, given that the subsection was enacted to address the Enron disaster, not some other far-flung set of dangers like what happened just right over here at the Capitol, it is unlikely that Congress responded with such an unfocused and grossly incommensurate patch in English. That essentially means that all of these people who were charged under this particular obstruction statute for January 6th, that is no good.
No good. But it doesn't mean they're immediately have their charges dismissed, nor if they're in jail, they're automatically freed. But it's a step in the right direction. That is the Supreme Court, one of the rulings they handed down today. And let me review it for you quickly. They ruled in favor of a participant in the January 6th Capitol riot who was challenging his conviction for, quote, a federal obstruction crime. Obstruction crime. Keep that word in your mind here. This reverses a lower court decision, returns it to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, and they'll have the opportunity to reassess the case with this ruling in mind. The case involves a lawsuit filed by Joseph Fisher. He was one of more than 300 charged by the Justice Department with, quote, obstruction of an official proceeding. That we're talking about, obviously, certifying the Electoral College votes. His lawyers argued that the federal statute should not apply. It had not, or rather, and it had only ever been applied to evidence tampering. I mean, actually touching the ballots and the reports, and tampering with them. That's what that would suggest. He never did that. And the way they say it's been interpreted previously, the federal statute only applied to evidence tampering. The Justice Department, on behalf of Joe Biden and DOJ, Merrick Garland, Nancy Pelosi, and all those on the left, argued that, no. Joseph Fisher's actions were, quote, a deliberate attempt to stop a joint session of Congress directly from certifying the 2020 election, thus qualifying their use of the statute that criminalizes behavior that, quote, otherwise obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so, and carries a penalty of up to 20 years in prison. Well, just as Neil Gorsuch questioned at one point, well, considering that argument and the heckling at the State of the Union address, how does that fit? Or what about Congressman Jamal Brown, Democrat in New York, who just lost his primary race, pulling a fire alarm, diverting a House vote? Then that would constitute obstruction. Jamal Brown ended up pleading guilty that, yeah, I did pull it, and he got a misdemeanor fine, and I made an apology, and that just was glossed over. If any of the J6 people at the Capitol that day had pulled a fire alarm, do you think it would just be glossed over like that? Even if they admitted, yeah, I pulled it. I thought we needed to sound the alarm. But Bowman lied in the beginning, and in fact, the video shows him taking fire alarm exit, do not use this door, except in case of emergency. He takes all those signs and removes them, and then he reaches over and pulls the alarm and said, well, I went out the door, I was rushing to a vote. Well, the vote got held back because he didn't make it there, and then bottom line is, he didn't rush out that door, he prepared to go out that door, and then pulled the fire alarm, which obviously caused consternation for members of Congress. So the Justice Department Solicitor General said, there are multiple elements of that statute that I think might not be satisfied by those hypotheticals, such as pulling a fire alarm. That doesn't obstruct justice. Or heckling the president during a speech. That doesn't obstruct. And then added that obstruction requires meaningful interference and corrupt intent. I don't know that they can prove meaningful interference and corrupt intent on anyone at J6 that day. But in particular, the case that was filed by Joseph Fisher, one of those who had been charged. Chief Justice John Roberts then pressed the Solicitor General for the Attorney General's office about an opinion issued in 2019 by the Office of Legal Counsel. Now, that office serves as legal advisor to the department and other executive agencies, which then stated the obstruction statute should be viewed narrowly, and thereby it contradicts the DOJ's position in this very case. Her response as Solicitor General, it was never formally adopted. Every time you try to come up with something, say, well, what about this? No, doesn't apply this time because it doesn't fit our narrative. There was another major court ruling today that's going to be a big deal for business people in general, small and big. The Supreme Court ruling in favor of a group of fishermen. Say, what a bunch of fishermen. What do they got to do this? Well, they have challenged a decades-old legal doctrine, which they say gave the administrative state too much power over their business. And this means also you and your business. It was a 6-2 ruling. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson did not participate in the majority, or did not participate at all. Let me correct that. The majority said the federal rule for the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, which required the fishermen to pay $700 a day for an at-sea monitor, is out of bounds Congress set for the federal agency. Well, their regulatory agency, they thought, you know, let's just charge all these fishermen $700 a day. You can't do that. But they did, and it was adopted at that time. It's been known basically as the Chevron Doctrine, a legal theory established in the 80s that says if a federal regulation is challenged, the court should defer to the agency's interpretation. In other words, the court doesn't do it. What about the regulatory agency? What do you say? We say they pay $700 a day. And the court would just go along with it. Not this time. Chief Justice Roberts, writing for the court majority opinion, Chevron is overruled, adding, courts must exercise their independent judgment in deciding whether an agency acted within its statutory authority. careful attention to the judgment of the executive branch may help inform that inquiry, and when a particular statute delegates authority to an agency consistent with constitutional limits, courts must respect the delegation while ensuring again that the agency acts within it. But the courts need not defer to an agency interpretation. In other words, the court is supposed to make the decision, not turn to the regulatory agency and say, what do you want us to do? No, you shouldn't do it that way. And that's been in effect for decades, 40-plus years. And Justice Roberts again saying, Chevron is overruled. And I cannot tell you, I'm looking here, I do not find anything that explains why Ketanji Brown Jackson did not participate. This is, again, a 6-2 ruling. So the two liberals stuck together, and the conservative position was, as expressed by Justice Clarence Thomas, he said Chevron deference, quote, permits the executive branch to exercise powers not given it. He said Chevron deference was not a harmless transfer of power. No, it wasn't. It was giving them whips and chains to use against businesses and however they chose. Now, I found something very interesting last night in the debate. Biden went on the attack against Trump. That, man, you, all the courts you've gone to, they've all rejected. They rejected all the, they rejected. The, you want to abide by the courts. Which one of them right now is defying a Supreme Court ruling? You cannot simply say student loan payments are deferred. You don't have to pay them. Which one? Which one? Oh, yeah, that'd be Joe Biden. And he's complaining about Trump not paying attention to what the courts say. I want you to hear some ideas or at least positions posted by New York Times and CNN after last night's debate. And speaking of last night, after the debate, Dr. Jill Biden, she's a doctorate in education, which is just perfect for this analogy. She sounded like the school teacher praising a student simply for staying in the lines while coloring. That story when we continue.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want to give someone something which they will really enjoy? Give them a Cafe Napoli gift card. You pick the amount, and they pick which of the Cafe Napolis they want to visit. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Cafe Napoli in Town and Country, Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles, or right next door, Napoli C. The Napoli gift card. It's the perfect gift for anyone or your entire office. Cafe Napoli. Cafe Napoli.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Joe, you did such a great job. You answered every question. You knew all the facts. And let me ask the crowd, what did Trump do?
Oh, my God, there's Dr. Jill Biden. Joe, you get a consolation prize. You get an extra ice cream cone. You stayed within the coloring lines. You answered every question, which is a lie. He did not answer every question. And to that point, I will say Trump also did not answer every question. He often had to backtrack as to what Biden just said and correct the record, and then never got around to answering the question directly as they wanted. They pushed him on abortion two or three times, obviously, Dana Bash, her part. I want to say something for a moment. Overall, I'll have to give Jake Tapper and Dana Bash credit for just being good moderators, asking the question, doing a follow-up when they can. They weren't prefacing with slanderous remarks or attacks, so I'm going to give them a good grade, a B plus, maybe an A, for simply serving as they were supposed to. Some of you may not like that, but I'm looking at it as a journalist. And I think to that extent, they did accomplish the J-O-B. Now, let me share some things for you from CNN. This is on their CNN webpage, or it was. It may not be when you go to it. Biden disappoints, Trump lies, and deflects in CNN presidential debate. Well, the Trump lies, obviously, I disagree with, and deflects, I also disagree with. But the opening two words, Biden disappoints, goes on down to say that Biden still plans to debate in September. And then reaction, Biden's debate performance setting off alarm bells for Democrats. then they have an opinion listed. The real loser in Thursday debate, haven't even had time to look at it. A CNN flash poll. Majority of debate watchers say Trump outperformed Biden. That I have in front of me. This is a poll of debate watchers conducted by SSRS. And debate watchers, 67% to 33%, say that Trump turned in a better performance. Prior to the debate, the same voters estimated 55% believed that Trump would do better. 45% of the Democrats believed Biden would do better. And in 2020, Biden was seen by debate watchers as outperforming Trump in both presidential debates, which I disagree with, but it's your own opinion. But a near universal 96% of GOP debate watchers say Trump did the better job in the debate. When you ask Democrats, 69% of Democrat debate watchers view Biden as a winner. Keep that in mind. GOP debate watchers who are already for Trump or are going to vote for him, 96% say he did a better job. 69% of the Democrats who are going to vote and support Biden say that he did a better job. All right, so let's say they get 30% of the Democrats don't think he did a good job. That's what that comes down to. Then you get the New York Times. Let me read this headline I got this morning. A debate recap. In debate, Biden struggles to fend off attacks from Trump. That's big print for New York Times. Saying Donald Trump delivered aggressive attacks, and then they say, and made wild assertions. They misspelled that word. Oh, wild assertions, that's what they're trying to say, that stretched the truth. And President Biden appeared to meander through his answers, fumbling at the end of sentences, even as he accused Trump of being a liar and a threat to democracy. And yeah, Larry, you butchered that too. You kind of fumbled around it. Yes, I did. I did. I'll take the blame for it. Give me the ball, coach. No, I don't want the ball. No, I want the ball. But that was from the New York Times. But here's another important piece out of the New York Times. New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman, who's a friend of President Biden, been an advisor for him. He wrote an op-ed titled, President Biden is my friend. He must bow out of the race. He said, watching Biden's disastrous debate performance makes him want to weep. To weep. Does that not say it all? I think it does. Coming up, a January 6th discussion and more on the debate. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.